Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, L.A. County District Attorney George Gascon, the second gentleman of the United States, Doug Emhoff, who wants to be the first gentleman of the United States, and later a conversation with Ram safety Quentin Lake. Let's start with George Gascon, who is currently the District Attorney of Los Angeles County, elected back in 2020 at the height of COVID, with strong support from Black Lives Matter. At the time, he launched some radically different policies than what the department was used to. Ended cash bail, got rid of sentencing enhancements for things like guns and hate crimes and various other things. Basically stopped prosecuting any minors as adults. And there was a lot of pushback in the office. Some 98% of people in the office supported the idea of him being recalled. The recall didn't happen. But there is a strong effort, including many people who work in his office, ran against him. The person who's now in the race against him is Nathan Hochman. The top two finishers in the primary were Gascon and Hochman. We talked to Gascon at the Hall of Justice in downtown L.A., which is an official government building. Because of that, he is not legally allowed to talk about the campaign, but we were able to talk about many of the issues that drive the office, and you get a good sense of where he's at. We'd like for him to do a debate. We'd like for him to do a campaign interview. So far, he hasn't said yes to either one of those things. But this is an extended conversation where you really do understand George Gascon's worldview, whether you agree with it or not. He is someone who thinks that the pendulum swung a little too far to the right in the 90s, and that you got to correct it when it comes to some of these criminal justice matters, and that means not always pursuing the maximum sentence for every crime. So here is George Gascon.
Mr. District Attorney, good to see you. Welcome to The Issue Is.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us in your home today.
Absolutely. The people's home.
The people's home. So I usually will end an interview with this question, but I think it's fitting to start an interview with you with this question because there's so much said about you.
Yes.
What do you think is the biggest misconception about you?
Oh, my goodness. I think there's, I think that when you are a public figure, there is a lot of conversations sometimes that are not necessarily connected to who the person is. I think that many people often think that I do not care about public safety, which is so contrary to the truth. The fact is that I have been involved in policing and, looking for community safety for 40 years. I go to bed thinking about public safety. I get up in the morning thinking about public safety. I care deeply about the safety of our community, and I live in a community, right? I have family, I have grandkids, so it's not like I'm some Martian that just drops in the morning to go to work and then goes someplace else. I live here.
Do you feel safe in LA County right now?
I do. I mean, when you look at where crime is heading in, the city of LA, the many of the cities around the county, and you look at even the county sheriff, which, has different stations throughout the county. You look at homicides, for instance. Homicides are historic lows. Overall, the trends are promising. Having said that, look, any crime is always unacceptable. Any murder is unacceptable. So to that end, that's why I said I go at night thinking about this work. I get up in the morning thinking about this work, because there is never such a thing as crime is too low, right? There's always going to be things that we need to attend to.
And I know you've thought deeply about sort of the way we've thought about criminal justice. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of folks that felt like in the 90s, we went too far to the right.
Right.
And then we pushed back. And some folks feel like we went too far to the left in the pushback of that. Where do you think we are now?
Well, look, I mean, I think the first was important. Look, homicides are probably one of the best barometers of where crime is in general, right? Because that's one of the few crimes that we know is never over or underreported, right? It is what it is. And when you look at where we are in terms of homicide as a county, we're at this historic lows. I think that's a good barometer. Now, we have other areas where we've had problems. We've had problems with organized retail theft.
Right.
We have problems with residential burglaries. And we're attending to those. We're being very aggressive. We have prosecuted over 100,000 serious crimes and felony crimes in the last 3 years. You look at organized retail theft, right? We have prosecuted now over 1,300 of those cases. You know, we're getting convictions at 89% of those cases, just this year alone, right? 477 cases have been prosecuted. And you know, as the police increase their activity here, you know, often there is a misconception of how the system works, right? We know, you know, police investigate and arrest. We prosecute, courts do the sentencing. Mm-hmm. We cannot prosecute until the police makes an arrest. We have seen a tremendous increase in the activity around policing with organized retail theft and residential burglaries, and we have reacted to that. You know, when you look, for instance, in 2019, before my administration, we were getting in the low 60s conviction rate on organized retail theft. You look at what we are today, we're 89%. That is a reflection of a combination of things, a reflection that obviously we had an increase, but also a reflection in police paying attention to it because we had the increase, and us, mm-hmm. you know, putting a different level of emphasis on these crimes.
What does 4 more years of you look like? Yeah. What's the biggest policy priority for the next 4 years?
Look, I mean, I think that hopefully I will get reelected, and if I do, what, you know, as we continue to address the evolution of crime and the evolution of public safety in our community, one of my goals is us to evolve in our own practice. So whether we're talking about gun crimes, for instance, we've now filed, you know, about 12,000 plus gun enhancement cases, right? But instead of doing it like we did prior to my administration, where we were filing, you know, it was a blanket policy I was filing, and we're focusing on the people that are causing the harm. You know, we'll continue to do that, and we'll continue to evolve. Organized retail theft, we've worked really hard, not only at dealing with what the police is bringing us, but also dealing with where the public policy stands. So working with the governor, working with the state legislature to tighten up our legislative tools in order to address what was clearly a new evolution of organized crime, right? Whether it's with the organized, the people stealing, but also the vehicles to sell this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Like Amazon and those things. So actually working to create new state law that requires the online retailers or the online platforms that provide the capacity for online retailers to be able to verify that the individual selling the property has a right to sell it, right? That would not have been an issue 20 years ago or even 10 years ago, right? So there's going to continue to be evolutions in our work, and what is there to expect if I were to be honored with another 4 years is a continuing balanced approach to the work and addressing the areas of crime that we can control, working with the police, working with community, and continuing hopefully to see the same downward trend that we're seeing today.
But how do you think about that balance? Because there are folks that knew you, say in the 90s when you were an LAPD cop, right, that say that you're different now. What changed your philosophy? How do you see, what is your basic philosophy when it comes to criminal justice and criminal justice reform, real concisely?
Yeah, you know, look, I mean, in the 1990s, I was, you know, I was very much a product of the moment, right? We were mass incarcerating people. We incarcerated a lot of people. We increased our rates of recidivism. We didn't necessarily create more safety, right? We were reacting to horrible increases in crime at that time. Mm-hmm. We're in a different place today. I've also matured. I'm a different place. I'm, you know, frankly, I'm in a different place today than I was in 2018 or 2020 or 2022. And if I were to be reelected 2 or 3 years from now, I believe that it is critical for a leader, critical for a human being, to evolve and face the new conditions that they're facing, whatever they are.
So how have you evolved from, say, 2018 or 2020? Yeah. What did you maybe get right at the beginning? What did you get wrong? What have you learned from?
Yeah, I think, you know, for instance, you know, organized retail theft, right? When I got elected, we were in the middle of COVID, right? And we started to see this evolution of this crime that wasn't, you know, it was always there, but it was a very different, looked very different contextually than it did. So learning how to deal with that, and it took all of us. It took law enforcement, you know, a period of time to, you know, we put task forces together. We started doing work differently. We, in my office, we said, you know, we're going to funnel all this through our organized crime division because this is really organized crime. We started thinking about conspiracy. We started thinking about other charges that normally we would not have thought about 4 or 5 years ago. in general terms. I mean, no question that we use those before. I used those in the past, but very, very seldom do we. But now we use them very regularly because that's what the text of the crime looks like.
But in terms of some of the blanket policies that you started off with, you backed off on some of them. What are some of the lessons you've learned in terms of that?
Yeah, well, you know, there were blanket policies in the office before I came in, right? The blanket policy before is always seek the maximum sentence, right? Always seek the maximum charging. And I came in and I said, we're not going to do that anymore. But we immediately started to adjust. And as my management team started to develop as well. So for instance, you know, very early on, right, that we said we're not going to do enhancements with hate crimes, right? And there was a lot of people that said, George, you know, this is a real concern for us because hate crimes are going up. Since 2016, hate crimes have just skyrocketed in the country. I recognize that. And we immediately unwound that and started alleging hate crimes. When it comes to guns, you know, we adjusted on that, right? And we've now filed, we're averaging about 4,000 gun enhancement charges a year. We created a committee of, you know, people at the top of the organization to review cases where special circumstances was appropriate. And since then, we have charged a lot of special circumstances cases. So, you know, it's the evolution, but it's also the adjustments we're growing into the place.
So what is the biggest change of George Gascon in 2024 compared to 2020?
I think that the biggest change is, you know, we actually are not under COVID, right? I mean, my first 2 years were, everything was remote, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I was walking to many places in our county and there was, you know, courts were partially shut down. So that caused me to, you know, operate in an environment that I was not used to it. Today, we're back to a normal environment. And you know, we're also, you know, our management team has matured. We've hired about 150 new lawyers since I've been in office. The work continues to mature and evolve, and, you know, we look at things a little differently than we did in 2020. And we will, by the way. Again, if we were to have this conversation 2 years from now, I'm sure that we will again.
But you've also had some turmoil internally. There's been millions of dollars paid out in retaliation lawsuits. A lot of people that worked for you ended up running against you. Why are they wrong? What do you say to the critics that worked here against you?
Yeah, well, first of all, now millions of dollars have been paid off, right? Yeah. We have one judgment of $1.5 million that is being appealed. There are other lawsuits that are pending. But look, I mean, this is a lot of this is a product of, you know, somebody that is coming from the outside with a mandate to do business differently than the way it was done before. You mentioned the George Gascon of 1990, right? And the George Gascon of 1990 is a different person than the George Gascon of today. Not necessarily in the basic principles of, you know, honesty and integrity, because I think those are immovable, right? But you know, how you look at the work. I think that this profession has been, for the last 20 plus 30 years, you know, we grew up in a way where the concept of public safety was always directly associated with trying to seek the maximum possible punishment. We went as a state from having under 30,000 people in state prison in the early 1980s to having 170,000 people by 2014, right? And, you know, clearly the population did not grow that much. So there has been an evolution, as you mentioned before, you know, where there was a swing, you know, very strong swing in one direction, then there was a correction in the other, and then there's a correction again. And I think that we'll continue to see that, and that impacts how some people view themselves and view the work inside the office, as people in the community do.
Are you concerned that there's a swing back to the right?
Look, if you look over 20, 30 year cycles, you're always going to see the right-left swing, right? Mm-hmm. There's overcorrection, and then things come to the center. I believe that actually I don't see necessarily a swing to the right as much as I see more of a swing to a center. And I think we also see that there's also, you know, there's a lot of misinformation that is being corrected, and people, you know, I'm out in the community a lot, right? And I have seen people who are a year ago, they say, you know, crime is skyrocketing, and then now people say, well, what is it the truth? Because I'm hearing two numbers, right? So people are beginning to question, and it gives us an opportunity to educate. So I think that it's not necessarily that it's going, you know, wildly to the right. I think it's just, you know, it's coming back to the center of gravity.
What are you proudest of?
Look, first of all, I'm very proud of my family, right? So that, I would tell you that, you know, my daughters, my kids are my grandkids, you know, I'm very, very proud of that. I'm also very proud of the fact that I feel very good about how I look at myself in the mirror in the morning or at night, but I'm giving it 100%.
What do you see when you look in the mirror?
I look at someone that tries very hard, someone that is very committed to the safety of our community. I look at someone that is human, makes mistakes, but I'm also very proud of the fact that I admit my mistakes and try to fix them and move on.
And how so?
In whatever.
Whatever. I know one thing you're especially proud of is that the process of getting people who were wrongfully convicted to be free.
Yes.
You've done that a lot. I know that's been a big effort for this office. Can you talk about that, why that's so important to you, and what that feels like to you when you see these men and women finally be free?
Well, look, I mean, when we convict the wrong person, there are several things that are occurring. Number one, you have the injustice of an innocent person going to prison, right? And that in itself is really very problematic because that impacts the credibility of our entire system as well as, you know, impacts the life of the human being. But the other component that often people forget, especially for many folks in policing and otherwise, if you convict the wrong person, that means that the actual perpetrator, the one that caused the harm, is still out there, right? And we have seen this over. I mean, we had a case like Mr. Maurice Hastings. He was convicted of rape and murder. He did 38 years in prison. He consistently not only maintained his innocence, but he actually asked to have his DNA tested. This office told him that the DNA was not there to be tested. I came into office, we tested it, found the DNA, tested it. Not only was he not the person that committed the rape and murder, but the person that did went on to rape other women before he was caught, right? Had we got it right the first time, maybe we would have prevented other rapes, and nobody knows, right? We have, you know, Mr. Solorio, right, who was convicted of, you know, of a drive-by shooting in Whittier, right, at age 19, did, you know, did nearly 2 decades in prison, and now he's back with his family, and he's, you know, now he walks around with his dog that he calls Freedom, which I think is as a dog owner, yeah, and somebody that loves dogs, you know, I love the image of Freedom walking around with him, right? That is something that touches your heart, touches my heart, because you see families that are coming together again, right? You're seeing people that are being given a second opportunity to be reintegrated in our community. And those were people that shouldn't have been in prison the first time.
A couple other issues that your office is dealing with. We talked a little bit about retail theft.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that you talk to out on the streets who feel like you're not tough enough, and because of that, you're encouraging some of this retail theft because they feel like there aren't consequences to crime. What do you say to all the people out there who feel scared and who are blaming you?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, look, I mean, I think when you look at our prosecutorial approach, over 100,000 serious crimes have been prosecuted. That's on par with the 10-year average for this office for the last 3 years. You look at our conviction rate, you know, and let's say organized retail theft, 89%, as opposed to 64% conviction rate before I came into office. When you look at the sentencing, you know, people are going to prison for some of these crimes, right? You know, you look at the fact that we're, you know, when we're going after violent crime, we're sending people to prison for very long periods of time. So if you look at our conviction rates, you look at our filing rates, you look at the sentencing, which, by the way, we don't control because the sentencing is really up to the courts, you see a very different picture. And I understand the frustration. And, you know, we're unfortunately at a moment in our history where there are multiple competing assessments of what the facts are, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we have right now somebody saying that, you know, Haitians, immigrants are eating dogs, right? But the people in those communities that are there saying this is not occurring, right? But that doesn't stop people from saying that, right? So I think that this is a product of the moment. And I think it really takes good people to stand up and call it out when they see it.
Another issue, we've seen these protests from a lot of these pro-Palestinian people shutting down freeways, shutting down the way to LAX, shutting down commerce. Mm. How should the DA react to that?
Well, look, I mean, this is an interesting area, right? Because you have overlapping jurisdictions, right? So you have, in the county, we're about 10 million people, about 5 million people in the county have jurisdictions that have a city attorney that handles misdemeanor prosecutions, right? So a lot of what you're saying, they're misdemeanors. So let's take the protest at the schools, for instance, right? The felony cases that have been presented to this office, they have been filed, mm-hmm. right? But the majority of the cases were misdemeanors. One exception for us, it was in Claremont Colleges, where we handle both misdemeanors and felonies. In those cases, we file a lot of cases, right? But when you're talking about UCLA, USC, when you're talking about some people maybe, you know, blocking a church or some in some parts of our the city of LA, a lot of that ends up in the hands of the city attorney. And I believe she's handling it appropriate, but I couldn't tell you because that's not an area that we have the details. But I can tell you that the cases that are being presented to the office, we're filing felony charges. We're actually, when it comes to hate crimes, we're filing at a higher rate, not only this office did previously, but we're filing at a higher rate than the entire state. And our conviction rates is nearly 80%. So we're filing, you know, nearly 90% of the cases, and our conviction rate is about 80%. We are by far more aggressive in charging the cases that are being presented to us than the office was before or the rest of the state. But again, I think there's always a lot of misunderstanding about jurisdictional overlapping because it is confusing. You know, misdemeanors in the city of LA are not prosecuted by my office.
Should it be a felony to block the freeway or block the way to LAX?
It really depends on what it is. You know, again, we don't make the laws, right?
Right.
We follow the laws. And you also have to remember that in addition to what should be, first of all, there has to be an investigation and an arrest, right? The body has to be brought over. I can tell you unequivocally that the arrests that are being presented to our office based on the evidence, we're filing this case is, you know, over 80% of the rate of filing, and we're getting convictions at around 80%. So we are very aggressively filing the cases of law enforcement is bringing over, and absolutely there should be attention and consequences for that behavior.
End on a couple questions about you. What is your why?
What is my why?
Yeah.
Look, I'm very passionate about creating a community where everybody feels safe, where people feel like they have the same opportunities as anybody else when it comes to the criminal justice system. I want a community where, quite frankly, my grandkids do not grow up in what my kids grew up, right? I want a place that we focus on hope, that we focus on, regardless of who you are, that everybody gets treated equally in the system. And for me, that's my North Star, and I will continue to push for that.
Was there a moment where your philosophy changed, or you sort of flipped and had a realization we got to do things differently?
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, first of all, I've always been very committed to public safety, right?
Sure.
I don't think you find anybody that becomes a police officer that doesn't care about public safety. That's the driving force for the women and men that become cops and prosecutors. So I've always had that as my driving force. But as I evolve and I mature in my own professional life, I saw the inequities of the system. I also saw the failures. I saw the high rates of recidivism, the continuing rearresting of the same people over and over again. And I saw the huge inequalities, like going back to the whole issue of the drugs, right? You know, scraping a coke pipe to get a residue of coke. You had a felony, you go to prison. Down the street in a very different neighborhood, people are in the backyard, you know, using coke and all this stuff, and you know, we were not there, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, that by itself created a big question mark for me, and then I started to look for alternatives and look at how other nations and even other communities within our own country are doing things.
How would you summarize your legacy as DA so far?
Well, look, I think that when you look at the massive system that I was able to be honored to have the opportunity to run for at least a term, and you look at all the changes that we've done, you look at not only the crime is going down, but you also look at the exonerations. You look at the fact that we have resentenced now 300 people, and out of 300, only 4 have reoffended, which is, you know, it's like 0.01%. When you look at the work that we're doing around reentry with juveniles, when you're looking at the work that we're doing in dealing with wage theft, you know, people often don't realize that the biggest theft crime in LA County is employers stealing from workers, which, by the way, impacts not only the worker, but it impacts a good employer, impacts all of us. Over $1 billion are stolen from workers every year. We created a wage theft unit that now has had 325 workers that have gotten back over $3 million in back pay. All these things are things that we're doing that were not being done before, and that really excites me. And I, you know, again, if the voters were to honor me with another term, we'll continue to evolve and hopefully do things better.
And we end with something called personal issues, which is fun. This is our rapid fire game of the first thing that comes to mind to get to know your cultural favorites, so we get to know a little bit more about you. So here we go.
All right.
What's your favorite TV show?
You know, I tell you that I am so bad because I'm boring, okay? So a lot of the TV that I watch is like news. I'm a news junkie.
Love that.
And then, you know, the other thing is I like some of the stuff that comes out, like, you know, the Masters of the Air, you know, like the sort of theme movies, that kind of movie series that go back into history. So those things are very appealing to me. And now, you know, my wife is into training our puppy more and more, so I'm being forced now to look at puppy training shows.
Okay, Cesar Millan. What's your favorite movie of all time?
God, favorite. You know, I really have many, but I have to say that the first Top Gun.
Okay.
Not the second.
One.
And the second one, the second one was great, but the first one was just that.
It was
the
original.
Technology and all the stuff. Yeah, I thought it was just so
Need
great.
For Speed, baby. Favorite book?
Favorite book. You know what, there are many books that I like. Again, I tend to be boring because I don't really read fiction. So I tend to read books that are, you know, about the work. I'm trying to think of one. I got like 12 books on my shelf right now, and I'm about halfway through several of them. I can't even think of one that I can say, you know, this is my favorite over any other book.
What's your favorite sports team?
Well, you know, if I were not to say the Dodgers here, I'd probably get killed. But they are.
Yeah, okay. You run the Giants. We would, your consultant would be coming after
you.
Yeah. And lastly, who is your role model?
Yeah, you know, my father.
Why is that?
You know, my father was a very simple man, and yeah, he was very complex. My father achieved a sixth grade education, and he was the most educated person in his family in terms of formal education. But he, you know, he was a man of his word. You know, he actually, to his detriment, he would say, I don't believe in contracts, you know, which obviously is antiquated by today. I said, you know, if I'm doing business with you, we shake our hand and I expect you to do your part and I do mine. And if you don't, then you broke that bond. He was an idealist, right? My father, you know that I'm Cuban American, you know, right. My father fought for the revolution. He actually almost got killed by the Batista regime, which is the one that Fidel Castro overthrew. And then, you know, he was hoping for a democracy in Cuba. And when that turned out not to be the case, you know, then again, he was on the wrong side. It was funny because he passed about 10 years ago. But he says, you know, I always seem to be on the wrong side. I told him, and that wasn't really his last days in bed. So I said, no, Dad, you were not on the wrong, you were on the right side of history.
Mm.
And yeah.
What do you think he would think of you as DA?
I think he was very proud of me. Yeah. Now, he would not always agree with me. You know, he was a very Republican in his thinking.
Yeah.
So there would be certain things that he would not, but I think he was very proud of me. I think that, you know, I was the first of my family to go to college. He was very proud of the fact that I joined the Army. You know, when I went in the Army, people were getting drafted and I didn't. I joined. And I can tell you that the day that I told him I joined the Army, I think he was just so incredibly proud. So.
Yeah. All right, well, we think of him tonight.
Absolutely.
And thank you so much for taking time.
My pleasure.
Get to know you a little bit better.
Yeah.
DA George Gascon, great
thank
to see
you.
Thank
you so much. Great to see you, too.
Our thanks to George Gascon. Now to a conversation with Doug Emhoff, the second gentleman of the United States. This is a conversation we actually had back in June, right before the Biden-Trump debate changed everything. We weren't able to air it in full then due to some time restrictions, but I thought it was important to people to hear it now, especially as the country takes a fresh look at him, thinking of him as a potential first Jewish person to live in the White House. We connected with Emhoff at Angel City Sports in Thousand Oaks. That's a female professional soccer team. He was visiting there as part of his effort to promote that. We also talked about his efforts to fight anti-Semitism and how he's changed in the role. We did this very close to our mutual hometown of Agora Hills, where both of us graduated from high school at Agora High School. So here is Doug Emhoff.
Always great to see you.
Good to see you.
Back to the issue is. So you and I both went to Agora High School, literally just down the road from here. What does it mean for you to be here?
You and I have talked about what it means for me to come home, but this is literally like coming home to my backyard. And it's very special. I've been traveling a lot, as you know, all around the country, especially now. And to be able to come back home, to do an event like this with Angel City FC, talk about pay equity, gender equity, and how we can support our elite athletes in women's sports, and it's good for them, but it's also good for all of us.
Yeah, I mean, this has been a big issue for you. You've traveled all over the country talking about this. You went with the Women's Cup team for this. Why this issue of all issues?
Being the first man in this role and someone who took a big step back from a career as an entertainment lawyer to support our first woman vice president, I wanted to find issues that I could move the needle on. I really thought that this was, and it turned out to be true. And I also love sports. And as we know, sports brings us all together. So to combine all those things into one is very compelling. And to center it around, you know, women in sports, equality, and it's not just pay, it's childcare, it's family leave, and in sports, it's also facilities and travel and training and all those things that elite athletes need. And that's all in play here, no pun intended, on some of these issues we're talking about.
Yeah, and a beautiful facility that we're looking at here.
This is great.
Another big issue that you have talked about so much is anti-Semitism. And you think about how when we first talked a few years ago at Shoah, how that issue has just exploded ever since. What do you think is going on? Because you've thought deeply about this issue. You've talked to people all over the country. Why is there so much anti-Semitism right now?
We know it's been there. It's always been there. As you know, we came out with the first ever national strategy to counter anti-Semitism back in May of 2023, all before October 7th. October 7th just supercharged the hate. I've called it a crisis of anti-Semitism. We see it on our campuses, at our markets, our places of worship, online. And it's just kind of ripped the lid off it. And we all have to come together. It's a poison on our democracy. All of us need to know that this anti-Semitism, this hate, is dangerous for all of us. So whether you're Jewish or not, we all need to come together and fight back against it, not just through words, but through action.
You know, this was not necessarily the issue for you as an Agora kid, but it's sort of found you, right, being in this job. Can you talk about what that's been like for you and the responsibility you probably feel in this job?
Yeah, growing up out here, kid from Agora, went to CSUN, then USC Law School, never thought that this would be where I'd wind up, but I'm a Jewish person. And as a Jewish person, I'm the first Jewish person ever to be a White House principal. And I take that very seriously. I feel very accountable. So from day one, and with Kamala, Vice President's urging, she's really the one who's continued to push me in, saying you have to use your voice. And Alex, some days, especially since October 7th, I don't want to do it. It's hard. I'm still processing my own rage and anger about what happened on October 7th. I'm still thinking about those hostages, and I'm still thinking about the conflict that needs to come to an end that's affecting everyone.
Right.
And so there's some days I don't want to do it, but I have to. And the vice president and president have been great of urging me on to continue to do it.
And just to wrap things up, I mean, how has this job changed you? We've seen you over the years, and it seems like you're even more visible now. How do you think that you've changed in this role?
Well, I've tried not to. It's funny when I see some of my old friends, and I'll say, you're still you. So I try to still be my true, authentic self, because that's what... Actually, Dr. Biden told me almost day one when I said, hey, any advice? She said, look, you just got to be you. But I've seen so much now. I've traveled our great nation. that we all love so much. I've traveled internationally. And to grow up right here, like in this neighborhood, to be able to say that and see the world and see our country and it's all of its glory and all of its beauty, I've changed for the better. I mean, it's just, I love our country. I'm so honored to be in this role and to support the president and vice president as second gentleman. I'm so proud of Kamala as her husband. She's doing great to just her home state. She's doing us so proud. So, excited about the future.
Always great to see you. Go
you
Chargers.
Too, my friend.
Go Matadors. Go Trojans. Go Lakers.
Lakers
all
go
the
Rams,
things.
Go the Rams. Go Dodgers.
All of it.
Great to see you,
buddy. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And go Angel City.
And Angel
Jesus.
City.
Yes,
layup.
Yes,
total
yes.
Layup.
Of
go
course.
Angel
yes,
City.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Our thanks to Doug Emhoff. Now we take you to Watts, where the Rams donated a football field this week. And we spoke with Rams safety Quinton Lake. Here's our story.
Oh, good catch. Good catch. Hit your dance.
L.A. Rams safety Quinton Lake can't help but dance as the team unveils a new field at Nickerson Gardens.
One, two, three.
Yeah! It's a big change from this dirt field at L.A.'s largest housing project.
They're giving us respect of putting the field in the Nickerson Gardens.
This field has come a long way to end up here in Nickerson Gardens.
They originally installed it on Hermosa Beach for a special draft event.
What up, man? How you doing?
But it's now being repurposed for this community in need.
It just makes other people who never got the chance to play get the chance, and they get the opportunity.
We sit down with Lake, a SoCal native. He's the son of NFL linebacker Carnell Lake. Like his dad, Quinton attended UCLA. And Quinton has become one of the Rams' most active community servants. From building homes to handing out food, he especially loves interacting with kids.
Why was it important for you to be out here today?
I think it's important just to give these kids and the community, a face to look up to. It's important for us as football players to use our platform to show these kids and show everybody that, you know, they have somebody in their community, somebody on the Rams that they can interact with. You know, we're these superheroes to them, but at the same time, we view ourselves as regular people that can interact, have fun, and enjoy the game that we love and share the experiences that we have with everybody else.
You know, we call this special athletes who serve. Mm-hmm. What does service mean to you?
Service is, it's an obligation. To me, it is, but it's an obligation that I feel proud to do, whether that's doing school drives, whether that's coming out and, you know, enjoying the game of football that I love with these kids. It's humbling.
And you know, we look around here, there's a lot of poverty here. I mean, Nickerson's Garden is a housing project. Is there sort of a unifying thing about sports, about the meritocracy of sports, and about sports that can kind of lift people up?
At the end of the day, everybody loves running around, throwing the football, shooting the basketball, so to me, it's like there's something in common with that. And there's experiences and moments that we can share all together. So it really is a blessing to be able to come out here and have a common experience that we all share.
Bottom line message you want everybody to take away from this story, from your story.
We are nothing without the people that support us and the people that cheer us on each and every Sunday. So thank you for the fans. Thank you to the people that support us. Thank you to everyone that supports us. And it's really a blessing to have the support system that we do.
You're easy to root for. I'm rooting for the Rams anyways, appreciate but you're that. Great. What
Thank
an
you.
Incredible spokesperson.
Thank you so much.
Well done.
That was awesome. Love the Rams and love what they were doing in the community. Thank you to Quinton Lake, to Doug Emhoff, to George Gascon for sitting down with us. Next week, we'll have a conversation with former Facebook head Sheryl Sandberg about a new documentary that she is putting out about anti-Semitism. We also will have both candidates in one of the most important congressional races in the country, the fight to replace Katie Porter in Congress to represent Orange County, Republican Scott Baugh, Democrat Dave Minn, both coming into our studio. That's next week on The Issue Is. For now, I'm Alex Michelson. Thanks for listening. Please like, subscribe, tell people about it, share it out. Let me know what you think in social media, and have a great week.